Okay. Thank you. Thank you. Hey, everybody, I'm Dave. I am an alcoholic. I appreciate you guys coming. It's a real privilege for me. And as you know, this is where I got sober in this room a long time ago. And it means a lot to me. And the more I think about it, the stranger it is. You know, if I think back to those first 90 days in this room, or first 11 90-day pins I had in this room, it was a long time ago. And what the way I see things today versus how I saw them then versus how I saw them even a year ago, it's always changing. Like I said, there's always more in recovery. There's always more, you know. If you're not excited, take some action, because there's always more, no matter, you know, where you are in recovery. It's never ending. So we are on chapter 5, and it's titled How It Works. And that alone is, they get to this point on this is, if you're reading the book, like I like to read the book pretending it's 1939, there's no such thing as AA, you've received this book, you're trying to overcome a problem in your life that's just killing you, killing your family, killing everybody you love, and you have no idea what's wrong. You now have this book that's trying to explain to you what's wrong, and now they're going to explain to you what the people who helped write this book, what they did to change and get better and be relieved of the horrific situation they were all in. And they could have named this, you know, How It Works, or Here's What We Did, or, you know, Here's What You Should Do, or You Better Do This. I mean, there's a lot of things they could have titled this chapter. But this is how it works, and it does work. And my sponsor, I always forget what he used to say. He said, you know, it works, and it works every time, and if it's not working for you, it's because you're not taking some action or something that you should be. When he said it, I couldn't argue. So let's start. It says, and it's important, it says, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed the first 100 people, our path. And, there's talk that Bill wanted to put never have we seen a person fail, and I could say that's true. But the thing is thoroughly followed our path. And that's always the question I was asked, and I don't ask it enough of guys I talk to, but, you know, the question is, every day, are both your feet on the path? Are both feet on the path? You know, if I have one foot on the path, which I do, I'm going to get what I get, you know, but, you know, are both feet on the path every day? It says, those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to this simple program. Completely give themselves this simple program. Usually men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. And constitutionally, that was a big one for me. It's that my constitution was insufficient to allow me to be honest. And, you know, when I had relapsed for so long, like I had, we talk about the jumping off point. That's where I got to. And my thing was, I said, I am the guy, and it horrified me. And it was a big part of my bottom. I was constitutionally incapable of being honest with myself, you know. And we'll talk about rationalization as we go along, but that's a big tool of ours to keep us constitutionally incapable. There are such unfortunates. They are not at fault. They seem to have been born that way. That always interests me. They're naturally incapable of grasping and developing a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty. Not a lot of honesty, not, you know, rigorous. You know, each word is important, and rigorous is a very important word, and honesty. Their chances are less than average. There are those two who suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders, and that's true, but many of them do recover if they have the capacity to just be honest and with themselves. And You know, I don't know where that comes from. If that Bill I know suffered from a lot of depression, and I don't know if that's what's being referred to here. But you know, if we can be honest and if we can thoroughly follow the path, we can do this. Our stories, the first 100, disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and what we're like now. If you, reading this book, have decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you're ready to take certain steps. And I think it's important that you be able to define what any length means. So when you talk to somebody, because you have to say, and David and I were referring to this a little while ago, somebody who wasn't willing to go to hardly any lengths at all. it's a very little length I asked, and it didn't... It wasn't followed through on. But, you know, you need to say, this is, you know, what I expect. This is what any length means. Because if you say any length and you leave that open, then they're making it up in their mind. You know, am I going to have to collect money at the airport, you know, like the Hare Krishnas, or am I going to, you know, you don't know what any length means. So I think it's important to really communicate that to when you work with somebody. At some of these, we balked. We thought, and again, the first 100 people thought they could find an easier, softer way, but they could not. With all the earnestness at our command. Now, earnestness is a word used a lot in this book. And you would think I would have it memorized by now, but I don't. Earnestness is defined as seriousness, determination, sincerity, purposeful intention. You know, that word earnest is used a lot. It's sincere, determined, a seriousness and intent state of mind. So they use that word a lot. I thought it'd be good to tell you what the definition is. With all the earnestness at our command, we beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. And I understand that today. I was not fearless and I was not thorough for a long time. And I paid a price. And I think I see a lot of people pay a price. And so when the thing is, when you're asked to do something in AA and you say, you know what, I don't need to do that like I did. And even if my sponsor, you know, if I call someone out on that, they're going to be more determined not to drink to prove to me that they were right and I was wrong. So their relapse is not going to appear. If I didn't say something, maybe it would appear in a month. Now they may go for a year. What a wasted year that is. You know, for me, that's what happened to me. I would not follow suggestions. I would say, I don't need that. Let me prove to these guys I don't need that. And I was always proved wrong. And I wasted a long, long time, and I just don't want anyone else to waste time. So we beg of you, to be fearless and thorough for the very start. Don't try to be smarter than you think we are. Some of us, I know, have tried to hold on to our old ideas, and the result was nil. That's zero. Until we let go totally, absolutely. You know, these words are all very, it can't be more clear. You know, we read this at every meeting. Who listens to it, right? I mean, who really listens to it? I listen to one thing, and I'll get to that in a minute. It's fascinating. Remember that we deal with alcohol. Cunning, baffling, powerful. Without help, it is too much for us. But there is one, capital O, who has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. And I wish I could have found him right here. You know, I wish I could have found him right here. You know, because that's all this is we're trying to bring you to your God, to, you know, your relationship with your God, who you trust implicitly. You have faith that whatever's going on, there's a reason for that. This, your God always has your back. And if you can have that in your life, you will find peace. It says, here are the steps we took, again, the first 100 people, which are suggested as a program of recovery. I should say a successful program of recovery, maybe. Okay, so it says one, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol and that our lives had become unmanageable. And that's your big question to the person you work with. And if I can admit that, step two is I came to believe that a power greater than myself or ourselves could restore us to sanity. And it's sanity, it's our relationship with alcohol. It's our relationship, and then it's our relationship with all our character defects. But we'll start with alcohol. Step three, I did this with somebody this week. Me and Alex were talking about it. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. And that's a biggie. You know, that's a biggie. And I wish I could record people. But I heard a guy say down the shore one time, step three for me is I have total faith and trust that the script for my life is already written. Every single thing is written. There's nothing I can do to change it. Not a damn thing. So if I know that, I'm just really here to go through the process, go through the motions. If I trust that God has already written my script, no matter what it is, there's no way I can alter it. And so I may as well just, turning your will over to God, doing what you know God wants you to do to the best of your ability every day, all day, will change your life and you will find the peace that, you will find what you're looking for and what you've been looking for in drinking, if you can do that. And here's where it gets good. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. And we'll read about that, but that is to be discussed and explained and communicated and defined with the newcomers so they can understand the benefit of going through this exercise. Five, we admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. And this is one that somebody explained that his sponsor said to him, I love this, he said, that's the order, God, ourselves, and another human being. And so if I need to be right with God, with myself, and then I'm ready to be right with other human beings. So when you're new in AA, and we were talking about relationships before the meeting, until you're right with God and you're right with yourself, which you will become through the step process, at that point you're ready to be right with other human beings and all various types of relationships. Six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. And that was one for me, and this is maybe wrong to say, but a big benefit for 6 and 7 for me was reading a book called Drop the Rock. You know, I didn't understand what my character defects were, and when you read Drop the Rock, it's terrifying, you know, because step 6 and 7 really are what changed us, you know. So we're ready to have God remove these defects. And then in 7, and in my prayers every morning, I humbly ask God to remove these shortcomings. And I usually get specific with, a couple every morning, and they're always changing. But we humbly ask God, please remove these shortcomings, you know, so you can better serve God, really. 8, now we make a list of all persons we've harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. And these are the people we've harmed. A lot of them come from our 4-step, but there's a lot of people I've harmed and didn't do anything to me. So they also go on this list. I become willing to make amends to them all. And a good sponsor helped me understand why. Who was I talking to? I think Alex again. About certain things that he had no part in, but he had to be free of it, and that's a good sponsor. My sponsor helped me with the similar type of things. And then 9, made direct amends, face-to-face amends to such people whenever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. And again, that's where a sponsor comes in. I had a guy, and I make my guys write it on index cards, and we rehearse them, you know, so you can't make a mistake. But then he came back saying, well, my ex-wife, blah, blah, blah. And he goes, well, I did tell her that I used to drive the kids around drunk. And I'm like, that wasn't on the card, you know. Where on the card is that, you know? And, well, I felt she deserved to know. I'm like, no, she didn't deserve to know. You felt like you would, you know, it helped you to be honest with her. And it says, except when to do so, would it, you injured her. You injured her, you know, with that. And that was, took a little while for him to understand that. But, you know, that a sponsor, and we get to this later in the reading, but a sponsor should guide you through this process. Then 10, continue to take personal inventory. And when we were, so we're clean now through 9. Theoretically, we are clean. We have cleaned up the wreckage of the past. And now we want to keep it clean. We don't want it getting cluttered again. So we continue to take personal inventory. And when we're wrong, which we will be, we promptly admit it. And that's powerful. It's the more we can admit it, the better we are. And 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve, always improving, every day improving our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for not only for knowledge of His will for us, and giving us the power to carry that will out in our actions every day. And this is the one, if you're ever bored with AA and it's getting a little slow for you, pay attention to when they read how it works. This is how everyone reads it. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, everyone always says as a result. It's the result of these steps. The result. There's one result. It's we have a spiritual awakening. Spiritual awakening is we see everything differently. Our relationships are different. Our priorities are different. Our motives are different. We want to give. We don't want to take anymore. We want to help. We no longer need to be helped. And as I said, it's such a wonderful thing. If you've had it, you're so grateful. You want everybody else to have it. And that's our job, you know. Having had spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we try to carry this message, the message in this book, to alcoholics, and more importantly, we practice these principles in all our affairs, and that's not easy, but the better you get at it, the better you get. Many of us exclaimed, I would say all of us exclaimed, what an order, I can't go through with it. But do not be discouraged. No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. We are not saints. The point is, we are willing to constantly grow along spiritual lines. The principles we have set down are our guides to progress. We claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection, we, the first 100 people. Our description of the alcoholic, the chapter to the agnostic, and our personal adventures before and after make clear three pertinent ideas. And those ideas are, A, that God, that we were alcoholic and we could not manage our own lives. B, that probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. And see that God could and would if He were sought. And I think B is important there. The day I realized that God had relieved my alcoholism was a big, big day. That came, unfortunately for me, after about 5 years. I really believed, they talked about selfishness and self-centeredness. I believe since this time I had done a 90 and 90 and I had done the steps and I had made coffee and I had set up chairs and I had semi-sponsored a few guys through encouragement, you know, and gave them my, you know, I thought that's why I was sober. And it hit me that there's no way I could have done any of this myself. I don't know why, but it did. And that really changed things for me. So here, being convinced... Of the things we just talked about, we were at step 3, which is that we decided to turn our will and our life over to God as we understood Him. Just what do we mean by that, and just what do we do? And this is this is This is what changes our life. The first requirement is that we be convinced that any life run on self-will can hardly be a success. And hopefully we've proven that. That's always a question we ask the newcomer. On that basis, we are almost always in collision with somebody, with something or somebody, even though our motives are good. And this was what was done to me, and I didn't like it, and I've never met anybody who did, but this is how it was read to me. Dave tries to live by self-propulsion. Dave is like the actor who wants to run the whole show, is forever trying to rearrange the lights, the ballet, the scenery, and the rest of the players in his own way. If Dave's arrangements would only stay put, if only people would do as Dave wished, the show would be great. Everybody, including Dave, would be pleased. Life would be wonderful. And trying to make these arrangements, Dave may sometimes be, and this is, when you point this out to guys, they don't, it's hard for them to buy, but oh, it's so true, you know. In trying to make these arrangements, Dave may sometimes be quite virtuous. Dave may be kind, considerate, patient, generous, even modest and self-sacrificing. And that's what I always, you know, when people accuse me of self-centeredness, how can you say that? I'm generous, I'm modest, I'm self-sacrificing. But it's not always true, rarely true. On the other hand, Dave may be mean, egotistical, selfish, and dishonest. And that's true. But as with most humans, Dave is more likely to have varied traits. What usually happens? The show does not come off very well. Dave begins to think life doesn't treat him right, and Dave decides to exert himself even more. Dave becomes on the next occasion still more demanding or gracious, as the case may be. Still, the play does not suit Dave. Admitting that Dave may be somewhat at fault, he is sure that other people are more to blame. Dave becomes angry, indignant, self-pitying. What is the basic trouble? Is Dave not really a self-seeker, even when trying to be kind? And that's what we talk about. We come in, we're takers. You know, we are takers when we get here. It's a human condition. You know, everybody is for the most part. And even outside of AA, and it was pointed out to me, the people, the happiest people you find out even in the real world, and you know, and a lot of them are upstairs probably right now, you know, are charitable giving people. For them, it comes naturally. It doesn't really come naturally. We think it does, but it doesn't really come naturally to us. Is Dave not a victim of the delusion that he can wrest satisfaction and happiness out of this world if he only manages well? Is it not evident to all the rest of the players that these things are what Dave wants? And does not Dave's action make each of them wish to retaliate, snatching all they can get out of the show? Is Dave not, even in his best moments, a producer of confusion rather than harmony? And this behavior has manifested itself in my life in so many ways, and I can only worry about myself, but even in recovery, you know, I've shared my behavior around my brother-in-law, who was active, and at family functions, I would always be passively aggressive and snide, and finally my wife said after one family function, because we wanted him to get sober, and she said, why would he ever want to get sober when you're the face of AA and you're such an asshole, you know? And she was right. She was dead right. You know, I was judgmental and sarcastic and passive-aggressive and thinking I was somehow right in my delivery of a bad message. Our actor is self-centered, egocentric, as people like to call it nowadays. He's like the retired businessman who lolls in the Florida sunshine in the winter, complaining of the sad state of the nation, the minister who sighs over the sins of the 20th century, politicians and reformers who are sure all would be utopia if the rest of the world would only behave, and the outlaw safecracker who thinks society has wronged him, and the alcoholic who has lost all and is locked up. Whatever our protestations are not most of us concerned with ourselves, our resentments, and our self-pity? And that's a big question to always ask yourself. Are we not concerned with ourselves, our resentments, and some sort of self-pity? And this is it right here, and this goes over really well with newcomers. selfishness and self-centeredness, we know, is the root of our trouble. And, you know, the day you know that is the day you can start getting better. Selfishness and self-centeredness. And that, again, is manifests in infinite ways in my life anyway. Driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity, we step on the toes of our fellows, and they retaliate. Sometimes they hurt us, seemingly, at least according to us, without provocation, but we invariably find, usually with the help of a sponsor, that at some time in the past we have made decisions based on self, which placed us in a position to be hurt. And these are the things we'll get to, we kind of try to shine a light on in people's four steps, or fifth steps. So our troubles, we think, are basically of our own making. Maybe that should say definitely, but it says basically. They arrive out of ourselves, and the alcoholic is an extreme example of self-will run riot. And that's how we get to Alcoholics Anonymous. Our self-will runs riot, and when it causes enough problems, we end up in this room. Though he doesn't usually think so. Above everything, we alcoholics must be rid of selfishness. And, you know, the one way to do that is to just think about giving at all times. You know, if you think about giving and what you can bring and what you can do for someone else, that is a good start on your selfishness. We must, or it kills us. Kills, doesn't hurt us, it kills us. God definitely makes that possible. And there often seems no way of entirely getting rid of self without God's aid. Many of us have had moral and philosophical convictions galore, but we could not live up to them even though we would have liked to. Neither could we reduce our self-centeredness much by wishing or trying on our own power. We had to have God's help. This is the how and the why of it. First of all, we had to quit playing God. It didn't work. And that's a big question we ask the newcomer, and they usually don't think they're playing God. I know I didn't anyway. Next, we decided that hereafter in this drama of life, and this is great, God was going to be our director. He is the principal. We are his agents. He is the father. We are his children. Most good ideas are simple. And this concept was the keystone of the new and triumphant arch, which we were to pass to freedom, you know, if we choose to. You know, you have to turn your life over to God if you want to find freedom and peace. And they're pretty clear here. Principal, agent, father, children, you know, director. They're pretty. The definitions are pretty easy, even for me to understand. When we sincerely took such a position, all sorts of remarkable things followed, and that's true. You know, that is true, and that's, you know, actually that's a question I should probably be asking guys as we're going along. You know, are all sorts of remarkable things happening in your life at this point? So we had a new employer being all powerful. He provided what we needed if we kept close to him and performed his work well, you know, to the best of our ability. And that's a little open-ended, which is not good for people like us. But, you know, he won't give us what we want. He'll give us what we need, you know, and what we need is far greater than what we want. established on such a footing, we became less and less interested in ourselves, and these are promises, our little plans and designs. More and more, we became interested in seeing what we could contribute to life, or contribute to your home group, or contribute to your meeting, or contribute to AA as a whole. As we felt new power flow in, as we enjoyed peace of mind, there's nothing more you can ask for. As we enjoyed peace of mind, as we discovered we could face life successfully, not be successful, but face life successfully, as we became conscious of God's presence, we began to lose our fear of today, tomorrow, and the hereafter. We were reborn. President of God, we used to lose our fear of today, tomorrow, and the hereafter. We are reborn, and that is, that is pretty inconceivable. I experience it on and off, and it changed my life. But it is that is the greatest thing you could really, to lose fear of today, tomorrow, and the hereafter is quite a thing to have in your life. It says here now we are now at step three. Many of us said to our Maker as we understood Him. And it's great to get on our knees. I didn't do it. I don't do it enough. I do it with a newcomer. I work with a lot of guys who have been through the steps a lot, and I have gotten away from this. I've gotten back to it lately. The humbling act of getting on your knees with another man or woman, and saying this together is such a bonding experience. It really brings you closer with the person you are working with, and it will make them, I believe, think twice about taking their will back. But it says here, God, I offer myself to Thee to build with me and do with me as Thou wilt. Relieve me, I love this, and this is in most of my morning prayers, relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do Thy will. Take away my difficulties, my character defects, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of Thy power, Thy love, and Thy way of life. May I do Thy will always, every day, every minute, every decision, every circumstance. We thought well before taking this step and making sure we were ready, that we could at last abandon ourselves utterly. I wonder which is a stronger word, utterly or totally. I'll get back to you on that. Utterly. But utterly must be a good one. Utterly to Him. Mm-hmm. I wonder why they put utterly. We found it very desirable to take this step with an understanding person, such as our wife. I wonder when the last time that happened. We know this is dated, but... but I'll tell you one thing. I do pray with my wife. Not enough, but I'll tell you, when things are tough and you get down on your knees with your wife, problems get solved. Or at least, they get better anyway. An understanding person such as our wife, our best friend, a spiritual advisor, we do it nowadays with our sponsor, but it is better to meet God alone than with someone who might misunderstand. The wording was, of course, quite optional, as long as we express the idea, voicing it without reservation. This was only a beginning, though, if honestly and humbly made, an effect, sometimes a very great one, was felt at once. And I believe if you get down on your knees with somebody and you pray to God with another person, unless it's your wife, men with the men, women with the women, it is powerful. It is it's uncomfortable, but it is powerful. Next, I love this, everyone always, next, we launched out on a course of vigorous action. The first step, which is a personal house cleaning. So the house needs cleaning, which many of us had never attempted. Though our decision was a vital and crucial step, it could have little permanent effect unless at once followed by strenuous effort, a strenuous effort to face and be rid of the things in ourselves which had been blocking us from God. Our liquor is about 10% of our problem, so we had to get down to causes and conditions. Therefore, we started upon a personal inventory. This was step four. A business which takes no regular inventory usually goes broke. And I have been broken. I have been broken in AA more than once, mostly in the early years, but later on. Taking a commercial inventory is a fact-finding and fact-facing process. It is an effort to discover the truth about our stock and trade. One object is to disclose damaged and unsaleable goods and to get rid of them promptly and without regret. And it's our job to be able to, in AA, to help people do this. Obviously help ourselves when we go through the steps, but more importantly, I think this is something I'm always trying to improve on, is to help people see these things, understand the benefit of getting rid of them, and then getting rid of them. If the owner is, of the business is to be successful, he cannot fool himself about the values. And that's that applies to a lot of things in our lives, how we value things and how they hurt us. We did exactly the same thing with our lives. We took stock honestly. The first 100 people took stock honestly. First, we searched out the flaws in our makeup which caused our failure. Being convinced that self manifested in various ways, I would say in infinite ways, was what had defeated us. We considered its common manifestations. I just did a fist step with somebody this week, and I'm not sure we took stock honestly on something. But anyway, here it is. Resentment is the number one offender. It destroys more alcoholics than anything else. From it stem all forms of spiritual disease. And that is what I, you know, my best description of it is we have a soul sickness. And we have a hole in our soul and we try to fill it with drugs and alcohol. And then early in AA, we try to fill it with other things that hurt us. But it stems from forms of spiritual disease. For we have not only been mentally and physically ill, we have been spiritually sick or empty. When the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. In dealing with resentments, we set them on paper. We listed people, institutions, or principles with whom we were angry. We asked ourselves why we were angry. Column two. In most cases, we found it was our self-esteem, our pocketbooks, our ambitions, that's a big one, our personal relationships, including sex, that they were hurt or threatened. So we were sore, we were burned up. On our grudge list, we set opposite each name our injuries. Was it our self-esteem, our security, our ambitions, our personal or sex relations which had been interfered with by this person we're resentful at? And so we were usually as definite as this example. So I'm not going to go through this right now, but we can see Mr. Brown as a, you know, Mr. Brown's a great one, and the one I love is, you know, Mr. Brown, what's the cause? He's hitting on my wife. He told my wife I have a mistress, and that's a no go. That's crossing the line. And Brown also wants to get my job. You know, so the best thing I've heard someone say, they were at a convention and they saw a guy with a T-shirt on that said Mr. Brown needs his ass kicked, which I think is great. But those are perfect examples. You know, but. You know, he's got attention to my wife because Brown knows I have a mistress, you know, and you know, Brown's really got the goods on this guy. So anyway, and then it affects my, obviously, sex relations, self-esteem. Again, told my wife, sex relations. So that's the idea, and this is something we need to... I usually do my... When I work with somebody, I'll go over my four-step inventory, and I'll give my examples and what I saw and explain. I'll give one or two good examples so they can prompt them to see what's being done, why it's being done, and what the benefit is. So it says here, we went back through our lives. Nothing counted but thoroughness and honesty. And, you know, when it comes to your four-step, it's, and my first four-step was weak. You know, but it's like anything we do in life, garbage in, garbage out, you know. And but my second sponsor explained to me the benefit and the purpose and the benefit and how damaged I really was because of this stuff. And so I did a much better job the second time. When we were finished, we considered it carefully. The first thing apparent was that this world and its people... were often quite wrong. To conclude that others were wrong was as far as most of us ever got. The usual outcome was that the people continued to wrong us and we stayed sore. Sometimes it was remorse and then we were sore at ourselves. But the more we fought and tried to have our own way, the worse matters got. As in war, the victor only seemed to win. Our moments of triumph were short-lived. And that applies in so many categories in our lives. Triumphant over attaining things, triumphant over a relationship with somebody. They are fleeting. It is plain that a life which includes deep resentment only leads only to futility and unhappiness. To the precise extent that we permit these, do we squander the hours that might have been worthwhile? And that is something that needs to be pointed out, is how much time, how much, you know, there's so many great sayings, and of course I don't remember any of them, renting space in your head and things like that, but how much time in our lives do we waste on our resentments, our ambitions, our things that are making us sick. With the alcoholic, whose hope is the maintenance and growth of a spiritual experience, this business of resentment is infinitely grave. We found that it is fatal. The first 100 people found that it was fatal, for when harboring such feelings, we shut ourselves off from the sunlight of the spirit. The insanity of alcohol returns and we drink again, and for us to drink is to die. So that's what all this is we are shutting our, with all our defects, we are shutting ourselves off from the sunlight of the spirit, and that's where we find peace. And in that peace, we find happiness and we find everything we're looking for. But you can't find it if you are shut off from the sunlight of the Spirit. If we were to live, we had to be free of anger. The grouch and the brainstorm were not for us. They may be the dubious luxury for normal men, but for the alcoholic, these things are poison. And that's the other one. A resentment is like giving another, or drinking poison and waiting for the other guy to die. We turn back to the list, for it held the key to the future. We were prepared to look at it from an entirely different angle. We began to see that the world and its people really dominated us. In that state, the wrongdoing of others, fancied or real, had the power to kill. How could we escape? We saw that these resentments must be mastered, but how? We could not wish them away any more than alcohol. So the one thing is, you know, I'm going through a couple things in the last week, and I like to think I can think my resentments through. I really can't. You know, I have to write about them. I have to write. And so if I, you know, I've had 7 things I've been writing about in the last 2 weeks, and 3 of them at least, probably more, but right now I'm up to 3, are fancy. They're not real. You know, they're not. When I write about them, I can see them, and they're in my mind. They're not real. I make them real, but that is an important, you know. And that's it. The wrongdoing of others, fancied or real. Most of the time they're fancied, but we do make them real. And so that's one thing I can say, you know, even after you've done your 4-step, keep writing. You know, keep writing. Writing is seen. When we write something and read it, it seems so stupid, you know, whereas in my mind it seems very logical. This was our course. We realized that the people who wronged us were perhaps spiritually sick. And Alex and I, we talked about that yesterday. Though we did not like their symptoms and the way these disturbed us, they, like ourselves, were sick too. That means we're sick. Mm-hmm. Let's all remember that.
We're all sick.
David, except me?
Yes.
Right. Exactly. That's what he said. When he says, anybody here new or here for the first meeting, David yells over, raise your hand. We are sick. And like I like to say, AA, I love AA. It saved my life. I love AA more than anything in the world. But it is not a hotbed of mental health in here. We ask God to help us show them the same tolerance, pity, and patience that we would cheerfully grant a friend who had cancer. You know, when a person offended, we said to ourselves, "This man is sick." This is a tough one. This man is sick. How can I be helpful to him? God, save me from being angry. Thy will be done. And I failed at that today. I said, God save me from being angry, and I was still angry. Mm-hmm. But I'm glad I just read that. We avoid retaliation or argument. We would not treat sick people that way. If we do, we destroy our chance of being helpful. We cannot be helpful to all people, but at least we ask God to show us how to take a kindly and tolerant view of each and every one. And here's a good one. And you would think it would solve all your problems. It doesn't for me, but it should. Whenever you have to say something you know you shouldn't, there's 3 questions. I got this from our boy Dave. Does it need to be said? Mm-hmm. Does it need to be said right now? And does it need to be said by me? And you can always find, and you should be always able to find a no. Unfortunately, rationalization makes me say yes, and I say it, and I regret it. But that's a good one. Does it need to be said now? Does it need to be said now? Does it need to be said by me? So, referring to our list again, putting out of our minds the wrongs others had done, we resolutely look for our own mistakes. Where had we been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened? And I like to have frightened at the end. But we don't realize how frightened we are of situations. Though the situation had not been entirely our fault, we tried to disregard the other person involved entirely. Where were we to blame? That's all that counts. Where were we to blame? And we're always to blame, so figure it out. We are. You know, that's the thing. We are, you know, in my, I used to always think, my sponsor would say, you always want to remain a victim a little bit, and you'll never get free being a victim, even 1%, you know. So the inventory was ours, not the other person's. We're trying to get free here. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the inventory is ours. When we saw our faults, we listed them on paper. Again, write them out. Don't think about them. Put them on paper. We placed them place them before us in black and white. We admitted our wrongs honestly and were willing to set these matters straight. And we have to. We have to. Fearless and thorough. We have to do this. Notice that the word fear, and then we go right into our fear inventory, is bracketed alongside the difficulties with Mr. Brown, Mrs. Jones, the employer, and the wife. This short word somehow touches every aspect of our life. It is the evil and corroding thread. The fabric of our existence was shot through with it. It set in motion trains of circumstances which brought us misfortune we felt we didn't deserve. And again, we're talking about the first 100 people. So fear is something that really, really, really needs to be discussed and explained with the newcomer, because a lot of us don't think we're fearful, you know, and they say, it's fear is I'm afraid of not getting something I want, or how's it go? Not getting something I want, or
somebody not doing something.
Yeah, losing something you have. Thank you, Laura. Come on, you should know that one.
I'm fearless.
You know, and there's some truth to that, but fear drives us. Fear drives us. That's what I love. That I think I've shared it, but that's what Mark Houston used to, with our character defects, he used to say, a limousine picks me up every morning, and I walk out, and the driver's sitting there waiting for me with the door open and says, "Good morning, Dave. My name is Fear, and I'll be driving you around today." And then the next morning, he comes to pick me up, and he's out there, "Good morning, Dave. My name is Lust. I will be driving you around today." You know, and we, what are we driven by? Well, we are driven by fear nonstop all the time, and we'll get to the opposite of fear pretty soon. But did not we ourselves set the ball rolling? And we did. I'll cut right to the end for you. We did. We think fear ought to be classed with stealing. It seems to cause more trouble. And, you know, with stealing, fear robs us of so much in life. Fear takes away so much time, so much that could be better spent giving and helping others. So it robs us of good we could be doing. It robs us of all sorts of stuff. You know, the opposite of fear is faith. And if you have undying faith that no matter what's happening, it's for a reason, it's okay, it's for the good. You can't see it, but you have faith that it's for the good. Your fear gets less and less and less. We reviewed our fears thoroughly. We put them again on paper. Even though we had no resentment in conjunction with them, we asked ourselves why we had them. Wasn't it because self-reliance had failed us? Self-reliance was good as far as it went, but it didn't go far enough. Some of us once had great self-confidence, but it didn't solve our fear problem or any other. It made us cocky. When it made us cocky, it was worse. Perhaps there's a better way. We think so. For we are now on a different basis. And this is where, this is the gift. This is the gift. We are on the basis of trusting and relying upon God. We trust infinite God rather than our finite selves. And if you can do that, you will be the happiest person on the planet. If you can trust your infinite God totally, or, you know, you will be the happiest person on the planet. We are in the world to play the role He assigns, just to the extent we do as we think He would have us and humbly rely on Him, does He enable us to match calamity with serenity? We never apologize to anyone for depending upon our Creator. We can laugh at those who think spirituality is a way of weakness. And no one ever really says that to you, but they're thinking it, you know, they're thinking it. And that's okay, you know. Even people we work with, you know, when I try to hammer God home, like I said, they're always nodding their head like this to be polite, but I can tell inside. You can see it. You can see it in their eyes. You can see it in the conversations you have with them during the course of the week, you know, day to day. And when they get it, it's just the greatest. We never apologize for depending on our Creator. We can laugh at those who think spirituality is a way of weakness. Paradoxically, it is the way of strength. I would say it is the way of peace. The verdict of the ages is that faith means courage or peace. All men of faith have courage, I guess, to admit that they have faith. They trust their God. We never apologize for God. Instead, we let him demonstrate through us what He can do. And that's, you have to change if you're going to let Him demonstrate through you what He can do. We ask Him to remove our fear and direct our attention to what He would have us be. At once we commence to outgrow our fear. And I think I will stop before we get to sex. We're doing so well with God, why confuse it? I'll stop there. Thank you.
Thank you.